Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I love him. I can't get enough of him.
Let's hear that Boston accent.
Big jab there from Duffy, and Frank Mir is hurt now.
Down goes Duffy, out cold. Frank Mir does it again.
Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bull artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Headshot. Bang.
All right, good to be with you Thursday, June 15th, episode 416 of the Anik and Florian podcast presented by DraftKings. Ray Longo has a fucking pen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I had to write something down.
For the first time in nearly 420 episodes of the show, you got a pen. Is this your preparation for the podcast, or is this something totally unrelated?
Well, no. Definitely, no, it's meant for the podcast, but the fact that I'm actually forgetting what I'm writing down is not, it's pretty scary.
What did you just write down, Ray?
I forgot Nunes's opponent's name.
Okay. That's preparation, though. It shows you guys.
I know why, because Grasso keeps popping into my head, and I can't, whatever. But I got it.
I can understand.
I'm good to go.
So Ray Longo just wrote down a Rene Aldana because he wants to be prepared to talk to the great Roger Krall, chief corner of Amanda Nunes, who's going to join us shortly here on the program. And coming up in about 20 minutes, we will also be joined by UFC welterweight proper Mike Malott. I can't stop saying that name in a Boston accent. 10-1-1 for Mike Malott after a huge win at UFC 289. We'll get into some other stuff on Amanda Nunes. And then Ray Longo is hitting the pavement to Atlantic City, New Jersey, Charlie Campbell, Damian Nelson, Dennis Bazooka, all set to be featured. And we were talking a little bit before the show. So Kyle Daukaus is fighting in the co-headliner in AC this weekend.
Yeah, pretty exciting. And also Aljo will be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
How about that?
The CFFC.
Which Hall of Fame? The CFFC Hall of Fame.
Right,
okay.
Any Hall of Fame. Any Hall of Fame is good.
Right. You're in a Hall of Fame, aren't you?
Maybe.
Yeah, at least one. No, well, remind me, because I know we talked about this.
But. No, we might have been. I might be in the Jersey Hall of Fame, but I actually never went to pick up my award, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we all talk about a brick and mortar mixed martial arts Hall of Fame one day that isn't just the UFC Hall of Fame, so that guys like you and Roger Krall can get acknowledged, because joining us right now here on the Anik and Florian podcast. Sorry, no Kenflo, by the way. An operator of the Science Academy. Gotta wear MMA Science Academy loud and proud today. He also was the chief corner for the now retired greatest of all time, Amanda Nunes, and he is in Las Vegas back in the UFC corner this weekend. The great Roger Krall is with us. Roger, what's up, my man?
Hey, how we doing, guys? What's up, coach? What's up, John?
Hey, what's up, Roger?
We're riding this mojo into the week, man. We're riding this championship mojo in the fight week, you know? Hey, so it's awesome.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it, man. Yeah, I'm here in my room. I tried to, you know, John, I think you know this. I'm not a computer tech savvy guy with my phone. Like, the girls made fun of me all last week. Coach, we're sending you all these attacks. I'm like, I can't even open anything. My phone's like 5 years old. My laptop won't do the Google Chrome download. So now I'm on my phone, but I'm here. I made it.
Roger, well, the phone is fine.
Yeah, I'll tell you how bad I am, Roger. I don't even know what you're talking about, Google Chrome. it means absolutely zero to me. So you're ahead of me. You got me beat.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. I'm lost on this stuff, but I'm glad I see, well, I guess half my face here. I'm trying to turn my phone the right angle without getting the
sunlight. There we go.
We're getting there.
Without getting the sunlight in there, you know?
Right. So, Roger, this is our 416th show. Ray has been on almost every one of those, and there have been varying efforts over the years to get him the proper equipment, but, you know, Ray Longo just does his own thing. So we take whatever version shows up, but today he's on time. He's got headphones, so we're very happy. But
Yeah, I feel better, John, because I feel like there's somebody else in the room now that shares my pain.
That's on the same level. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hey, I'm minus the headphones. I don't even have headphones.
They forced me to do this.
My screen's crooked. I got my coffee too, Coach. It's 9:30.
I love it. This is real. This is what real is. Oh, you want some bullshit cookie cutter crap in here? Real. Let's go, Roger. Let's light them up. Go ahead, John. I'm sorry. I interrupted, John. Sorry.
No, you're good. Yeah. Ray, though, can be a little bit hypocritical, Roger, because sometimes when I try to talk about like his haircut or anything that isn't martial arts, he tries to steer the podcast back to MMA, you know? Yeah. I like the free flow. You're still basking in the glow, obviously, just a few days removed from Amanda Nunes' domination of Irene Aldana. And for those who don't know, Roger is cornering Ronnie Lawrence this weekend at the UFC Apex. By the way, man, second fight of the night. Is that right? Second prelim of the night?
That's right, man. But hey, he's going to start the show with a bang. You know what I mean? So, he had his couple shots on like pay-per-view cards. Obviously, he had a bad fight the last fight. You know, only the coaches and fighters really know what goes on in these training camps, man. This kid had a staph infection. We should have pulled him from the fight, but we let him go ahead and fight, and he lost that tough decision, you know, 3-1 now in the UFC. But the kid is really special, man, and we're looking for something special on Saturday, you know, make a statement.
100%. Ray, I know, is going to get into Amanda Nunes and everything that was your last 8 weeks and your last fight week. But I just want to stay on Ronnie the Heat Lawrence, if I could, because in preparation this morning, I read a quote from him. And now Ronnie is starting to come clean, for lack of a better way to put it, right? He's starting to come out with some of the health issues that he's dealt with. I think, Roger, in some part because you might get some help, right? Like, my son has feeding issues, and no sooner do I go public with it, I got all these people coming at me with solutions. So I want to read you this, Raj, from Ronnie, and then you can sort of tell us what you know about this. So direct quote from Ronnie Lawrence: the last 2 or 3 years, I couldn't figure it out, but I kept getting what I thought were ingrown hairs in my beard. And it ended up not being ingrown hairs. It's some type of cystic acne from your hormones being fucked up. So whenever I go out in the sun too long or I overtrain and don't get the proper rest and recovery, it seems like the acne comes out on my jawline. I know he's dealt with nausea and at times suboptimal training sessions and fight weeks and fight nights, Roger. So what can you tell us about his relative health right now, 2 days out from this fight against Dan Argueta?
Man, I tell you what, this is most definitely the healthiest he's ever been. From the start of his journey on the Contender Series with me, he was, every fight week was like a nightmare when it came to the weight cut and just his body, you know, breaking down and shutting down and just wondering if this kid's going to be able to get in there and perform, you know, knowing what he does in the training room and, you know, how special he is, you know, with his skill set. But, you know, not being able to really show it because of this, you know, this issue that he's dealt with, you know what I mean? And he has, you know, went out there and done fight of the night performances, you know, with that, you know, so the last fight I felt horrible as coach because I didn't pull the fight, but it's like the kid literally did it 3 out of the 4 UFC fights where it was like a terrible weight cut. I mean, almost, you know, to the point of, you know, getting, you know, like I said, the not really a staff, but those infections he gets are so bad and so draining, you know what I mean? And just to watch him go through that and show up and push through the fight, you know? And the fight before this, he actually was on weight, and he had such bad cramping that this is when we were back at the Residence Inn. He could not make it down to the scale to weigh in. I'm just trying to get this kid paid his show money. And the ambulance had come up. They carried him from the bathtub to the stretcher to the hospital. You know what I mean? So it was like he's had definitely a rough part of the journey getting to this point. But I think, like I said, now he's got it figured out. Now we got his training. He was doing a ton of overtraining. You know, now we got it pretty much down to a science. His weight is the best it's ever been. I think we're gonna have the best cut he's ever had, and you know, and just get to go and do what he can do, you know, and show what he can actually do out there, you know.
Yeah, and I tell you, Roger, I'm sure there's nothing more frustrating when you know what your guy can do, but he's dealing with injuries. And look, Weidman, 30, he's up to 30 surgeries. 30.
Right.
I mean, it's insane. Right. Like, I don't know if he ever fought one fight healthy. I know, but you can't say that, because then people would bitch at me like, well, you said the guy was in good shape. You're like, I'm going to start telling you what his injuries are now before the fight. Like, it does, you know what I mean? Like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. But sometimes,
and that's how it is, man. Right?
Yeah, that's how it is. And
sometimes are making excuses for the guy, right? Yeah.
Without a doubt. But it's, you are telling the truth at that point. Like, sometimes the guy I see 3 weeks out or 2 weeks out, he's unrecognizable after the weight cut, and if he's got an injury, it just sucks, man. It really does. So hats off to Ronnie Lawrence, because he looks like an energizer bunny to me, that kid, too. He looks like he can do everything,
He was usually by this day, he's done. Like, we went out for a nice walk this morning. Like, we're still going to train this afternoon. Like, he's really, you know, really looking great. You know, I'm super, super excited for him.
Good for him.
Roger Paul with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. So total domination for the lioness Amanda Nunes, and she goes out in style. It seemed as though, Roger, there was some rumbling as fight week was going on that maybe she was going to retire. And it certainly flies in the face of a lot of the conversation that the four of us had, you, me, her, and Nina, at the Lioness studio the week before the fight. But essentially, on the final time we saw her in a UFC locker room, I did write copy to it, and I said, coming up, our final act, and might it be the final act in the career of Amanda Nunes? So you probably had more insight than most into this. And now when I look back on the fight week, a lot of it does make sense. But how much did you know about, you know, her potential to walk away if she dominated last Saturday night?
Man, you know, Amanda is super, super smart. You know, she knew exactly what she wanted to do. She didn't want the retirement to be like the main issue of fight week. You know, obviously we wanted to focus on the fight, and her thing, you know, at that stage, it was just to enjoy the journey, man. You heard her talking about it from the time that she left ATT, when she came back and she wanted to start the Lioness studio. That was her main goal, was to just enjoy the journey, enjoy every day going to the gym, enjoy the process, and just really, you know, just really be blessed for what we get to do, you know what I mean? And not have the, you know, have it be a, you know, not an environment she wants to do. So she's the one that created that environment, you know what I mean? So she knew going in, obviously, when they made the change from the Peña trilogy back to Arena Dania, she knew that was going to be it. She really didn't even discuss it, honestly, with the coaches. That week I was, you know, Cesar Carnero from MMA Masters, which was her first coach, you know, when she came to Florida, good friend of mine. She actually, you know, told him and Daniel, you know, and I happened to be kind of there. So me and Cesar, that was probably on Wednesday, you know, but really I never mentioned it to her. I just let her do her thing. We focused on the fight, and she was so into just being in the moment. And I think that's, you know, obviously as coaches, that's one thing we're always trying to, you know, tell our fighters is, you know, you got to stay in the moment, man. You got to enjoy the whole process. And especially, obviously, how important is that in the actual fight, you know what I mean? To be in there, you know? So yeah, it was just awesome, man. I'm still cheesing. I showed up here. I got home. I heard your travel is terrible. My travel is a nightmare too. I got stuck in DC. I got home super late Sunday, spent the day home Monday, came out here Tuesday. I mean, how many trips have you been on like that, coach, right? You know, so I rolled in basically two men deep on two. Like, guys, let's go.
we got this championship mojo. Let's go. Let's just carry it in all week.
Yeah, but Roger, it might have been big, but it's a lot better with a win than a loss. Yeah,
absolutely. A win makes those losses are terrible. For sure, no doubt.
That's a horror show. You're coming home on a win. I don't really care what happens on a loss. It's just magnified, and you're miserable.
Yep. Miserable because you're thinking about should have put it all away. You know.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So I do want to get into the fight a little bit, and we appreciate Roger Krall joining us from Vegas here early in the morning, a couple days out from Ronnie Lawrence fighting there. But in terms of this result, certainly it stands to reason that in 18 to 24 months, there could be some world beater 135 pounder that Amanda Nunes, the ultimate competitor, may want to beat. But this feels very final to me. Had Irene Aldana done something spectacular and knocked out Amanda Nunes, and this not been the perfect note on which to go out, do you think it stands to reason, Raj, that Aldana and Nunes are running it back and she's got one more in her?
Absolutely, man. I mean, you know Amanda, she wouldn't have wanted to go out like that, just like she wasn't going to go out if it was the trilogy with Pena. If she would have smashed her, she wouldn't have gone out like that either, just because she didn't want to retire on that note. You know what I mean? She wanted to retire on this note. You know, so and she really, you know, I mean, look at the history of our sport and what we do. You know, one of the few to actually go out like that. You know, I mean, the only to go out is champ, but, you know, to go out on her terms, you know what I mean? It's just awesome.
Love it.
You know, that's Yeah, man. You know, and we've seen for years all these kids, all these people, they get in there, you know, they make their little bit of money, they spend it just as quick, you know. But her and Nina, really, I mean, what an awesome family. You know what I mean? Just so happy for them and just so proud to just be a part of it. You know what I mean? Just be a part of history, you know. It takes a few days to kind of settle in, like what she actually did, you know, in the sport, but just in the fight and just her fight IQ and just everything makes a coach's job real easy. You know what I mean? It's like everyone's trying to look for, she's just awesome, you know?
Yeah, it was a perfect performance, and we could spend a quarter of an hour talking about the force that Nina Nunes is in her own right, sort of the general manager of this whole operation. But as far as the fight goes, Roger, how did it play out relative to your expectations going in? Because a lot of people, while we want to credit Amanda, did feel underwhelmed by Irene Aldana a little bit, especially maybe late in the fight when maybe we felt like she could bite down on the gum shield, take a few more chances.
Yeah, I mean, hey, that's Amanda's doing. You know what I mean? Amanda's the one that dictated in there. It pretty much went exactly, you know, as we planned. Like, you know, for a coach's perspective, when all the stuff you're training in camp, you know, is working and landing, it's just like, you know, there's nothing better than that. You know, of course, you know, you always think she's going to catch her with the one to finish, but I was really, you know, wanting her not to get, you know, crazy when she started landing some good ones. I'm like, hey, if the knockout's there, it will come. But what I don't want is you to tag her once and then just start, you know, get into a slugfest, you know, which could have been a little bit more dangerous. But, you know, Amanda just masterful. You know what I mean? She knew exactly right from the first stab kick, that first front kick of the fight. You know what I mean? She caught her in the body, and we worked so much on that, on, you know, her keeping her spacing and her distance. And we knew Irene was going to walk forward. We knew she kept a very high guard, so her body would be open. But just the way, like, Amanda, her movements and stuff just kind of walked her into everything. You know what I mean? And just, you know, again, her vision and her fight IQ is just off the charts. You know what I mean? So it's like you train stuff and she does it. You know, I make a call. She lands it. It's just like, you know.
Yeah.
Those type of fights are awesome, man.
Perfect.
Those
type
of fights are the best type of fights, man. So. Yeah, I don't think it could have been, you know, with the exception of KO and her, you know what I mean? It couldn't have been any better.
So, Ray, one thing that Roger mentioned at the airport was Amanda just pointing her toes at his midsection for the last 2 months, you know, even through maybe 4 inches of padding.
It's not
insane what you guys go through.
Yeah, it's not pleasant. Trust me, it's not pleasant, you know.
Yeah.
When you can stab somebody in the solar plexus with your toes, it's pretty good, man. I'll be honest with you. But yeah, no, you have to. I can't take the beatings like I used to, Roger, anymore. So I kind of dictate a little bit more, get guys to hold. But I do miss those days. You know, I wish I could do it, but it's just, it's getting to the point. Yeah, I can't kick the leg anymore, you know, so it's crazy. But man, hey, real quick,
Yes, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I saw that you were at the Degenberg Academy. Is that correct?
Oh, that was Chicago? That was in Chicago, I think 2015.
How long were you there for?
I was there for just a weekend, man. I got they promoted me to like 50, and I was originally a karate guy. You know, I was a karate kid in the 80s and 90s. I came from Kempo, and then after so many years and stuff, and getting promoted in those type of styles, I was just like, man, this is not even what we're doing anymore. We're doing MMA, So we kind of created our own system, as I know, you know, you guys have as well, as most of our academies do, and it's like, I kind of wanted to get a credit and lay a foundation from being able to promote my guys, you know, up in some type of system. And that's kind of really where the MMA science, came from. Being able to have a ranking and a level system for mixed martial arts, you know, like they've always done, you know, back to the days of Junri and Taekwondo.
Park. John doesn't know who you're talking about. John has no idea. No, why I bring up the Degenberg, because I know he used to bring in all the Jeet Kune Do guys back in the day in like the 80s. Yeah. I don't know if you were a part of that or not, but there were some really talented guys that I still hold near my heart.
Yeah, well, Dan Inosanto, who was like main guy, he signed my certificate for Fifth Degree. So
I love it.
Yeah, that's the old school, man.
Oh man, that's right. Say, so we're leaving people in the dark right now, but those were really good times to me, man. Everything was new and fresh, and the seminars were always good. You know, like Dan, I always thought was probably the best martial artist I've ever seen in my life, only because he had such
phenomenal martial artist.
Started doing jiu-jitsu with the Machados probably in his late 60s, which is crazy.
Right.
You know, maybe earlier. But yeah, great times back then, man. Really good times. So.
No, Ray's actually.
And to see the guys like.
Go ahead, Roger.
Go ahead. No, I was saying to. Like guys from that era have kind of a foresight.
Without a doubt.
Tired of snooty wines and their old wine culture? Confused by words like malolactic fermentation? Yeah, we are too. So with 19 Crimes, you can do the fancy schmancy tilt sip smell routine, or don't. 19 Crimes is the rebel of wine and culture, telling the stories of rogues and rule breakers who overcame adversities. From convicts banished to Australia to the legendary icon Snoop Dogg himself, 19 Crimes wine is defiant by nature, bold in character, and always uncompromising. 19 Crimes, the official wine of UFC. Pick up in stores nationwide or online at 19crimes.com. Enjoy responsibly. 2024, Sonoma, California.
Sound the trumpets, ladies and gentlemen. It is horse racing time, so saddle up for action with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. So right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250. All you need to do, deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Wager on your favorite horses, then watch the races live right in the app. Download the DK Horse app, not now, but right now. New customers get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when they opt in with code FLOW, FLO, only on the DK Horse app. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, 18 plus, 21 plus in certain states to open or access an account and a resident of a state where DK Horse is available. Eligibility restrictions apply, void where prohibited. One per new customer. Match calculated on first deposit up to a maximum of $250. Deposit requires two-time playthrough of settled wagers within 168 hours. Bonus released in $25 increments. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. See terms at dkhorse.com.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm on my phone, like I said, because I couldn't download the thing on my laptop. But those guys in that era that had the foresight to kind of maybe forecast a little bit the evolution of MMA,
100%. 100%. Yeah.
And even me, I came from a karate school, like a sport karate school in upstate New York. A guy, Steve LaValle, who was a black belt.
Oh, yeah, sure.
From the lineage of Ed Parker, really. But even in those days in the early 80s, you know, he was, you know, boxing, and my coaches were kickboxing for PKA. And it's like, you know, I think my first seminar I ever went to was like Joe Lewis, you know, as a kid.
Yeah, sure.
Just to see from that era, you know, from those days to what we have now, just is insane. You know what I mean? But it's, you know, yeah. So that's to go back to Daggerberg. That was 2015. I think I went there for a weekend, and they had a whole, you know, big ceremony, and I was promoted by all those, you know, kind of OG martial arts legends, I would say.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. I really loved those days. And I, like, you're right. I was considered more of a renegade because I wasn't really like a follower. Yeah, but even LaValle had a big name, you know. Kempo was a great style too. I loved Kempo.
Yeah.
You know, my first partner was a Kempo.
Yeah. That was a good style for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Really cool.
Ray, yep. The Renegade.
Yeah, and then I went back
Longo,
after that.
Not a follower.
Well, you know how it was, Roger. You know, those guys would do seminars. Guys were following them all over the place. But, I just was never that man. I always knew there's always a better way. And I thought that was the Jeet Kune Do way, you know, always to look and, you know, improve on your attributes and shit like that. So it kind of worked for me. Percent, so I'm happy.
1,000%, man. Like, you know, obviously, you know, the Jeet Kune Do, the Bruce Lee system, which, you know, Ed Parker really was the guy responsible for bringing Bruce Lee to the United States.
Without a doubt.
But these were guys that were like, you know, and these guys were principle based. You know, they were based on not, you know, the name of the moves or what the moves was, but how can I make this move work? You know, they were so open minded, not like closed mind. Like back in those days, man, it was still like, well, our style is better than your style. And this is way, way before 93 in the UFC. This was, you know, back 100%. When I'm going to come to your dojo on a Saturday and, you know what I mean? We're going to do battle, you know? So
it was very refreshing.
Those principles,
the open,
you know,
mindedness.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. From a genre when it was just like, you know, this style is the only style and that's it. You know what I mean? So that's just not what it.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it.
Awesome.
Love it. Yeah, when I saw Daggerberg, go, man, it brought me right to that. I was like, wow, this seminars. Everybody used to go to that place. Like everybody did a seminar there.
Yeah, he had at one point, man, the biggest academy. Like he had, man, over 1,000 students in Chicago. I think back in the 90s. Yeah, because when I first came to South Florida was 92, and I started working at a guy's karate school, East West Karate, guy named Greg Silva. And at that point, it was the Daggerberg was like number one, and we were number two as far as dojos, like commercial, as far as the size of like the dojo and stuff. You know what I mean? But, you know, that was kind of short lived because it ends up being like a, you know, a factory of belts and just, you know, not something I wanted to really do. I knew I wanted to make a living at martial arts, but, you know, not at the cost of, you know, having a bunch of 12-year-old black belts running around that don't even know how to have fun.
I hear you. Yeah, I never got the commercialization side down to my school ever. Still to this day, it's not working.
I keep my mind small now, family based. I mean, we have a great, great team, great coaches, and just, you know, trying to teach, you know, way more than just the martial arts skills, but bringing up this new generation of kids and just teaching them the martial arts way and the discipline, respect, and everything that goes along with it. That's really what we're about down here, you know. Yeah, man.
And if you want to see my son, Hunter, 4 years old,
yes,
you can
sir.
Find him at the MMA yes, Science sir. Academy's
yeah,
class
John.
Next week, Sunrise, yes, Florida. Right. And if you want to follow Roger on Instagram, I would go to @MMA Science Academy. Raj, you know we go way back. You've been at this a long time. A lot of people know you from way back when American Top Team Sunrise, no longer affiliated. It's the MMA Science Academy. This man has been at it forever. And, you know, I was so excited when Amanda aligned with you to this extent. And I'm just so happy to see, you know, her ride off into the sunset with you right there alongside.
Thank
so
you,
congratulations. Yeah, enjoy it. Get a fucking W with Ronnie Lawrence and we'll see you at the Academy next week, brother.
Awesome, Roger. Really.
Thank you, John. Nice talking to you, buddy.
Good luck this weekend.
Coach, pleasure, man. Pleasure. Awesome, man. Thank you, guys.
Congrats.
All right, there he is.
Do it.
Roger Crawl with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast, and Ray Longo trying to get Ken Flo fired by doing research on Roger Crawl today. I mean, you're digging deep, man. I'm impressed.
I got you back for last week when I stood there like a Momo and didn't say a word.
All right. Well, I know I have 15 more minutes with Longo, so we're very excited for him to be a part of our next conversation, because now with us on the guest line, and with us, of course, right on the screws at his scheduled time, because everything he does right. One of the big stars last weekend at UFC 289, UFC welterweight contender, proper Mike Malott. I'm just excited seeing your face. I can call you a welterweight contender, even if it's a number 16 or 17 that I don't see on my UFC rankings. Congrats on a huge weekend, man. Beautiful. Obviously, there was a lot of pressure on you to perform, and we're very happy it went the way it did. How have the few days since UFC 289 been for you, brother?
Thanks for having me on, gentlemen. It's cool to be on with you. And Longo, thanks, Ben. I didn't know you were going to be here. This is awesome.
Hey, Mike, I will say one thing. You have to have a hard time selling anybody you're a fighter. This is a model. I feel like I'm looking at a model, John. This can't be a fighter. Do we got a guy from Ralph Lauren? It looks like a guy from Ralph Lauren. I mean, this is crazy. No, but congrats, buddy. Yeah, I thought you looked fantastic. And I tell you, when I'm watching you fight, I'm thinking GSP, man. I think you're really and with more finishing skills, believe it or not. So I think you're right on the money, man. Love watching your fight.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. That's really nice to say, man. Thank you. Sorry, what was the question, John?
So I guess I'm just curious, like in some respects, it's like walking into your new life, right? I mean, I know I'm sure you're getting stopped in Canada at times, but you know, this show in a lot of respects was built around what you could do in your nation. And obviously the five athletes that competed before you held serve as well. How does it feel to sort of live up to the hype and walk out the other side?
It feels amazing. You know, like we talked about it a lot, fight week, just the gratitude for the moment in general and the opportunity, like, that's something I've been wanting to do since I was 13 years old. That there's, you know, win, lose, or draw. That was a dream come true, being able to be on a pay-per-view and represent my country on the world stage at home. And then kind of to throw some extra privilege and potentially some pressure on top of that is like, I'm the last Canadian. I'm the one holding it down. It was pretty clear that I was kind of the one being marketed as like, this is the Canadian. Maybe we should be watching, you know, from the UFC's perspective. It seemed like they really were trying to push me, and I'm super grateful for that. And man, I'm so glad it went well. But you know, it's like, you know, you try to just keep things in mind. Like, of course the crowd's going to play a factor. And for me, it plays like it played a positive factor. I love performing in front of people. And it, you know, part of me was thinking like, okay, it's going to be a big crowd. And even when I walked out there, I'm like, I visualized it bigger. I can go a lot bigger. Like, we might have to do the Rogers Center in Toronto at some point and do 55,000 again, like they did for UFC, you know, 129.
Right.
Like,
right.
I could do that. I could double this easily, you know? but it was amazing, man. It felt so good to walk out there. Aside from, you know, the fans almost taking me out, on the initial walk,
right.
You know, once we got past that, it felt amazing, man. Like, feeling that support from the crowd, feeling the support from the fans and everything all week leading up to the event. Like, you know, we couldn't leave the hotel lobby without having a ton of fans coming and saying like, hey man, we believe in you. We're happy for you. We're excited to watch you. And, you know, you can go a couple of ways with that and view it as pressure or view it as privilege. And, you know, we were just all week long, like, pressure's a privilege. This is, you know, a blessing to have this opportunity. And, I just got in there and felt really loose. Like, it didn't feel like the moment was overwhelming at all. Of course, like, you know, fight week's a lot and fight day is a lot, and everyone has, you know, ups and downs throughout the day and you know, good moments and bad moments, but we put so much work into the mental preparation for this fight and the physical preparation. Like, the fight before, the February 25th fight, was the best I'd ever prepared for a fight. And I was like, man, is it ever going to get better than this? Like, is this as good as it's ever going to get? And this last camp blew it out of the water. Like, we found so many little things to adjust to make the camp so much better. I was like, oh no, I'm so much better prepared for this fight than I was the fight before. And the fight before that had been my best performance to date. And I felt like this one was probably my best performance to date.
At one point, one of our producers asked if Mike Mellott had seen the railing collapse. I said, are you kidding me? Do you see the kid's agility? Like, absolutely, he saw it. And we're very thankful that, you know, that only became the storyline that it did. I have so many things I want to get into with you, and I promise I'm going to let Ray Longo get in here. But in terms of this particular physical challenge in Adam Fugit, right, sometimes there's a negative connotation when somebody says showcase fight, right? And it can mean, oh, Mike Mellott's a 6-1 favorite to beat Adam Fugit. Longo, that better not be your fucking dog. It better be Mellott.
Well, I'm in a car, man. It's not mine.
This guy, he's doing an interview from an Uber. How big can I possibly be? He's in an Uber right now.
All right, I'm going to try to stay on track. So Adam Fugit, though. So you're minus 200, so it's not as though you're some overwhelming betting favorite. Right. Adam Fugit's a good fighter, albeit not with a wealth of UFC experience, right? So, like, I felt like you handled this fight exceedingly well. You said to us, you know, he's got no major holes, but I believe I can, you know, force a mistake, and you certainly did. But what were your overall thoughts on the short fight that we did see here?
So kind of the fight, but before the fight, like you guys were asking me, he made some fair points where he's like, look, everyone's kind of counting me out, but I think it's kind of an even fight. I saw, and he's like, I see a lot of, you know, afterwards watching some of his interviews. I don't pay too much attention to what my opponents are doing. I prefer to focus on myself. So I went back and watched some interviews and just kind of, you know, been focusing, you know, on things we can do moving forward throughout the fight. So I saw him say, he's like, we're actually like kind of similar fighters in certain ways. And there are like some distinct differences, but I do see a lot of similarities between us. And, you know, he is a very high level fighter. And like you said, he doesn't have a lot of UFC experience, but he had the same number of fights as I did, right? So we both had 2 fights in the UFC. He's actually had considerably more UFC cage time than I have, right? He had the 3 rounds with Morales, taken on short notice, a fight that I had him winning. I had him up 2 rounds going into the third, a fight that he took on 9 days notice. And he's a big welterweight. Like, he struggled to make weight for our fight. He was the last guy to weigh in. He looked drawn out from what I'd heard. So, you know, like, you take a fight on 9 days notice against a 12-0 kid, your first time in the UFC on a pay-per-view in front of a crowd, you've got to lose all that weight in 9 days. You don't get to train for it. Like, that's a lot to deal with. And to still have an excellent performance against like a good guy.
Yeah.
That tells me a lot, right? He's a Muay Thai champion. He's a, you know, came from a Muay Thai, who's a Muay Thai champion that also comes from a wrestling background. You know, that's like, dude, that's a well-rounded guy and a brown belt in jiu-jitsu, like competed in professional jiu-jitsu for Submission Underground. Like, dude, okay, this guy has every box checked. It's not like this guy is athletic with power and a good sprawl. Like, this guy's got answers everywhere, right? Plus the physical boxes that he checks. He's got a 77-inch reach. He's southpaw. He's technical, but he's also kind of like awkward. It's like, dude, those are tough things to deal with, right? So there was a lot going into this. And then to add on top of that, like no one in Canada's giving this guy a shot. He's not a well-known name. So people are thinking it's a showcase fight. Like, oh, they're just teeing Mellott up for an easy win. It's like, dude, this is the UFC. There aren't easy wins. This guy's good. Right. This is a legit fight. And then just add that pressure of like, okay, everyone's expecting me to walk through him. So even if I win like a close decision or a close back and forth fight, like that's going to seem underwhelming, you know? So there was some pressure to like put on a serious performance, you know, and on top of that, like, where's your career going to go after? And some sponsors. And, you know, we started working with the Nelk boys. That was just getting ironed out. So I'm like, okay, well, I need to put on a good performance to make sure this stays and, you know, some good things happen in my future. But also at the same time of like, you know, we talked about acknowledging every potential outcome. It's like, dude, I love my life. And the outcome of a fight isn't going to change the things that truly matter to me. You know, I get to do this. This is a privilege. At the end of the day, I have an amazing family. I have an amazing fiance. I do what I love every single day with people that I love. I love my coaches are like the people I'm closest with in my life. So every morning I get to wake up and do my favorite thing, perfect martial arts with my favorite people. And I get to come home to my family and my fiance every day. Like, an outcome of a fight's not going to change that. The only thing it can do is like add to it and ensure that I get to continue to do this with my life. So, you know, I try to shift the perspective and recognize, you know, the privilege that's in front of me and then, you know, let go of everything. Be like, look, man, at the end of the day, there's rankings, there's money, there's this, there's that. it's just a fist fight in a cage. So get in there and fight this dude. You know how to fight. I feel like I understand MMA really well, and coaching for a long time at Team Alpha Male, I think helped with that a lot. Helped me understand fighting. So
100%.
Yeah, I think
100%.
You know, I might have done it a little bit backwards. You know, most guys are fighters and then get into coaching. So I kind of did it a little bit backwards for most guys. But I feel like there was a lot of value in those years of coaching, a lot of value in those years of planning with teammates and planning for fighters and making those 20 some odd walks as a UFC coach before getting into Contender Series myself. There was a lot of value in that. And the walk this time, again, other than the almost accident at the beginning, felt very familiar and it felt very comforting. Like I felt very calm on the walk. And as we got closer to the fight, the more relaxed I got. And once Bruce Buffer called my name, and once, Big Dan said, all right, you ready? It's like, buddy, I've never been more ready. Tell me to go do this.
Yeah. Man, I tell you, a lot, Joe, there's a lot to unpack there, believe it or not. But what really beautifully put, well said, man, I could tell you're a grounded guy. You're in a good spot. Your priorities are in line. But the thing with the teaching, and I make my fighters teach because, you know, the old saying, you want to get good at something, teach it. And it will help you become bulletproof in every area that you're teaching. So for what you did go, like you said, doing it backwards, man, I think you're looking superb. Your head's on the right. Your head's in the right spot. Technically, I think you look great. I mean, I don't know. You got a great career ahead of you. And I kind of like the way you did it because I think it makes logical sense. And I tell you, I think even Aljo teaching at the school, he would go over the things that he wants to work on too, you know, that are part of MMA. Just made him better and better. Widening, I remember before he even – maybe he had one or two fights. I took him to corner with me just so he got used to the UFC. I wanted to experience that. Like you said, by the time you're walking, you already made that walk 20 times. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think it's a fantastic story. Love it. Love listening to you talk. I think you're dead on with everything you're saying. Thank you. Really good stuff, man.
Ray, I know you got to get to the gym. Get on out of here. I'm going to spend 10 more minutes with Mike Malott. We'll talk to you again on Monday. You're the fucking man.
Awesome. And Mike, really was a pleasure. Love listening to you talk. I'm glad I got a chance to stay on and hear your story. I think it's fantastic. Keep doing what you're doing. You're the GSP of Canada right now to me. Keep it going, buddy. And keep your priorities in order like you already have. All right, guys, I'm out. Take it easy, John.
Thank you, Coach.
Thank you,
Mike. Take care.
UFC welterweight Mike Malott staying with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. And as your fights get bigger, we'll be able to tell more of your story, right, in terms of this passion to compete being reignited, right? Because you first set foot at Team Alpha Male in 2015. And at that point in time, the goal was to get to the UFC right then and there. And at some point, there was a pivot, yes?
Yeah. So I first got down to Alpha Male 2015 as a featherweight, which is funny to look back on and think about that. But
fucking monster at 145 pounds, folks.
Yeah, it was weird, man. I was a bit of a late bloomer and just started my career at 45, and it made sense at the time. And then just every year is like 2 pounds, 2 pounds, 2 pounds. And by the time I had my last fight, I was like, I'm never doing this again, man. Yeah. We're going up. And I feel a lot more comfortable at welterweight. Like, I like this weight class for me. I like this. I've felt great competing at this weight class. But yeah, the goals shifted. You know, I got down to Alpha Male with the intention of becoming a world champion and getting into the UFC and chasing those dreams. And I guess the goalpost shifted at a certain point where I felt burnt out and my priorities changed. And it went from being a young, invincible kid to just feeling like I honestly just didn't want to do it anymore. I got to a point where I was like, dude, I'm looking for a fight because I feel like that's the next logical thing to do. I'm like, okay, well, if I win another fight, maybe I get called to the UFC. And like that idea didn't excite me anymore. I was like, all right, well, how long do I have to do that before I get to stop doing that? It was like the point that I got to. I was like, dude, this isn't baseball, man. This isn't soccer. Like if you're not enjoying this, don't do this. Right. And I was making 800 and 800 dollars right at the time. Right. Like you're putting all this work in and doing all this stuff for, you know, by the time you pay everybody and costs of camp, you're in the negative every time. Right. So it's like, why am I doing this? And luckily got into coaching and Faber and had a role for me. And I got to just live a dream life for a while, helping my friends and traveling the world and training and learning new things and, you know, messing up in the corner and having fun. I was telling one of my corner men yesterday, so it was his first time cornering in the UFC, right? He's an elite level jiu-jitsu coach and he's been a jiu-jitsu coach for a long time. He's been working with me for a few years and he's been for a long time, for like 10 years, but he's been working more with mixed martial artists the last like 3 years, 4 years. And this was his first time cornering at the UFC. I kind of actually, like Ray said, I brought him with me into California to train and then coach some guys that he didn't know. I'm like, just make the walk with me a few times, especially because you're going to start coaching more and more, like get comfortable, do like 100 walks to fights, even if they're amateur fights, right? Get used to it and you'll be more comfortable. So it was his first time coaching at the UFC and he's such a like good hearted, honest guy. And he's like, man, I just want to do well. I want to make sure. I'm like, dude, you're going to do great. Don't worry about it. And when we're chatting after, he's like, yeah, you know, this is how I thought I did well. These are the things I want to work on. Or, you know, maybe I'm overthinking. I'm like, dude, you're overthinking it. You did a great job. And I'm like, you did way better than I did the first time I went between rounds as a coach in the UFC. The first time I went between rounds as a coach was with, when Darren Elkins fought Alexander Volkanovsky. So first things first, let's talk about my first three cornering experiences.
Right.
First fight, Truto Ishihara fights some unknown Russian guy named Pyotr Yan, making his UFC debut. Brutal. Yeah. Round, and the second one, Darren Elkins, who's ranked at the time on a 6-fight win streak, takes a fight against an unknown Australian, Alexander Volkanovsky. Fight number three, Cody Garbrandt fights for his title again against TJ Dillashaw. I'm like, damn it, man. Like, can we just like get somebody beatable, please? Right. but yeah, so second fight, I'm cornering Elkins. The first fight I cornered didn't go between rounds. Second fight is the Elkins fight. And with like 5 seconds left in the fight or in the round, the first round, Elkins gets caught badly and gets like held up by the cage, kind of covers up for a second and the ref jumps in. I'm the third guy, right? Like I'm number three. So the other two coaches go in and one guy stays out of the cage. And I'm like looking at Elkins. I'm like, is he okay? He's wobbly. Shit, he's wobbling. Is he all right? All right, they're getting him on the stool. Okay. Is he hurt? And I'm like, what am I doing? I'm still in the corner. Get up behind the cage. It took like 15 seconds. Like I was so like, shit, is he hurt? It took me like 15 seconds to realize like, oh, I'm supposed to be up behind the cage, bolt up the stairs. And right as I get there, Danny's like, and then this, Malat, go. And did just realize that I had just gotten there. I'm like, okay, cool. Nobody realized this. Gave him some advice.
How about that?
You know,
you're like, making me want to go to Fight Pass and rewatch it. And it actually, now I can acknowledge that you are human because I don't say this to butter you up, but like, dude, you have ice water in your veins and perhaps literally, I know you tripled down on the cold exposure during training camp. You told us that, and it helps you sort of deal with all the different things that come with fighting a man in a cage for a living. Yeah. But bro, like you just seem at least right now, and we'll see as the fights get bigger, main events, and we'll talk about that. But you seem either immune to pressure or whatever the fuck you have done mentally to get yourself to be calm and deal with that pressure. Keep fucking doing it because I know I'm not a fighter, but I've called almost 300 UFC live events and I am performing, right? It's a different nerve, right? Or adrenaline that I'm dealing with on show day, right? But whatever you're doing, bro, You seemingly have mastered the mental, if I can say that.
Thank you. I put a lot of work into it. So my mental coach and I, Danny Patterson, have been working together for over 11 years. And I think of him as absolutely valuable as every other coach that I have to my game. Like in the same way that I wouldn't go, I think I mentioned this in the broadcast meeting, right? I wouldn't go into a fight without a jiu-jitsu coach and training my jiu-jitsu. It's the same thing for me with my mental game. Like even, you know, I put a lot into it and that was one of the things that we adjusted this fight. We like tripled down on the mental work, right? I put so much mental training into this camp. And that's part of the reason I want a little bit of a break before I book a next fight or I really start talking about an opponent or a date, is because I just pour so much focus into this. And it's like, it's a lot. I've been in camp for basically a little over seven months, right? Like November, I got my Fury grappling match. Right after that went into the Johan fight. Right after that went into this. So it's been like, you know, a couple days of, I went to Cuba with my fiance and her family for 4 days after my last fight. But even still, I had the date already. I'm like, oh shit, it's June 10th. I'm doing like sprints outside the resort and stuff. And we're doing, right. You know, doing like, it's like, it's more just like the, you can't shut it off. So I'm excited to have a couple weeks of downtime, but I do also love pouring my passion and focus into this, right? It requires that, but I also do enjoy it. You need a little recovery in between, but there are a lot of mental exercises that I was doing throughout this camp. We picked them up even more throughout fight week, and we picked them up even more throughout fight day. You know, you get the ups and the downs, but we really have excellent tools to battle them. And I also gain confidence knowing that with my last four fights, although fight day can be a little bit up and down, every time I've stepped in the cage, I feel at peace and I feel quiet and I feel, I had written on my mirror, peaceful and violent for fight week, right? Like that's the state I feel like, yeah. I'm in when I get in there. I'm like, I know who I am. I'm going to show you who I am, you know? So, and if I just believe in myself and trust the training that I have, I really feel like these stoppages are going to keep coming. It's, you know, like I said, that was probably the best guy I've ever fought, at very least the best guy I've ever fought at welterweight. You know, Hakeem Dawoodi was an absolute animal. But that's at featherweight. You know, this might be the best guy I've ever fought, right? He was really good, and he still hasn't gotten the respect he deserves. But I just knew I was getting this stoppage, and I feel like we pour so much physical and mental training into the right places, right? Like I almost think of it like stacking chips. You know, there's, you know, maybe 10 categories in MMA that kind of encompass MMA, and you get like a certain amount of chips. There isn't enough time to allocate for everything to become a 10 out of 10 right away or quickly. It's like, where do you want to put the chips this week or this fight or this training session, or where do you want to allocate your resources? And I feel like we're doing a really good and efficient job of improving and sharpening, like finding new things to learn without constantly jumping to the next flashy thing, and refining the things that we're already good at in the basics without being too simple and not learning enough or playing it, you know, realizing how to play it safe without being boring and not getting finished. Like, I feel like we're dancing the line really well, and I feel like we get better at it each camp as a team, and we're all really close. Like it's funny. We're not all out of the same gym. We're all out of essentially, you know, all different places. Like my striking coach has a gym, my wrestling coach has a gym,
right.
My jiu-jitsu coach has a gym. And then my mental coach lives on the other side of Canada. So I talk with him on the phone, and he comes out every couple months.
So much of my prep today, bro, was like rooted in your coaches, because Cruelin and I go way back because of him as a UFC cup man. So I've gotten to know him, and just talking about Chris Prickett, Niagara Top Team, and this wrestling heavy gym that was rearing its head all across that fucking arena on Saturday night. Right. Like I could talk to you for hours. Right. Even just about the dynamic with your coaches. But I do think the calendar right now kind of will allow for you to maybe just chill for 6 or 8 weeks, right? I mean, you got Ian Garry, number 13, fighting 8th-ranked Jeff Neal. That's in August. You got Jack Della Maddalena, who's 14th, fighting Sean Brady, who's number 9, Michelle Pareda, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Let me close with this in being respectful of your time. You graduated university in Halifax, the rumblings of a Halifax show later this year. Does a main event interest you at this point? Do you not want to fight 5 rounds for your next fight, right? It would seem to me like you are on a trajectory where at some point there's going to be a main event in Canada that could come your way. So what's your appetite for ranked opposition versus a UFC headlining spot and all of that before we let you go?
Honestly, I hadn't even really considered that they would go main event yet. If that's what happens next, I'm down. Like I said, every jump that I've been doing feels like a massive jump. Right. Main event contender series, fighting a 10 fight veteran in my debut in a sold out arena, then on a main card against another tough Canadian, then this, the main card pay-per-view, like everything seems like a big jump. So at first I'm like, oh shit, main event, would they do that? Like, you know what? It's not out of the realm of possibility. And based on how we're training and how I've been performing, I think that's very doable. We will be 100% prepared for that if that's what happens. What I do kind of expect is next time they come to Canada, call me. Like, when are you coming back? I've heard some rumblings of some cards as well. And, so I expect to hear about that when they, when they solidify that, I expect to hear from them and say like, so you're going to be on this card, right? I'm like, oh, of course. But, I kind of expect if it's a fight night, I wouldn't be shocked if I either have the same slot or a co-main event. And if it's a pay-per-view, then the same slot would be amazing.
Yeah.
Right. That was the biggest fight I could have possibly had at that point in my career. So it's kind of like the Mickey fight again, where I'm like, dude, that was a bigger fight and a bigger opponent than I thought they were going to give me. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do next. Like, where they're going to go. Right. Cause it was like, I thought Mickey would be my third fight, something like that. Like a vet, everybody knows, like I've proved I deserve this spot and now fight someone everyone knows on a pay-per-view. Right. So I was like, man, I feel like, where do you go from here? Cause this was the biggest it could have been at that point. So, I'm more just like kind of excited to see what happens. You know, it's corny, but like one, I haven't seen the movie, but I saw a clip from a movie. It's Robin Williams in something. And, somebody says to him, he's like, yeah, man, I don't know what happens next. I don't even know what I'm going to do tomorrow. And Robin Williams says, right. How exciting. And I'm just fuck, you know what? Like, how exciting, man. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what my next opponent's going to be. I don't know where I'm going to fight next. I don't know what they're going to do with me. Like, how exciting, man. How exciting is our life? You know?
Well, and how exciting is it that the fan base largely, and for us, right? Joe Rogan says we're just professional fans, right? We share that enthusiasm. Like, I'm very excited to manifest Mike Malott in a main event here today on the Anakin Florian podcast. One bit of advice, though. You don't need to fight Jack Della Maddalena in Perth, Western Australia. I've been to Perth, Western Australia twice. Yeah. And just call me before you accept a fight that far away from home, because there's so much that goes into it. You know, it's just far, bro.
It is far, man. Like I said, they're coming to Canada probably two or three times a year.
Yeah.
I'm fighting two or three times a year. Call me when you come home.
Yeah. Proper Mike Malott. We appreciate the time. Try to enjoy the fruits, man. I know you're enjoying the journey, but after a big win like this, enjoy the fruits with your family. And we appreciate your time today, sir. We'll see you soon.
Appreciate your time, too. Thank you for having me on, John.
Pleasure, brother. All right. There he is. Proper Mike Malott with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. So one thing that I didn't get to, and partially by design, oftentimes in this sport, some of the highest profile opportunities and fights materialize on short notice. Even if you just look at Bilal Muhammad individually, his fight against Leon Edwards was the result of him stepping up on short notice. UFC 288 needed a co-main event, and perhaps Gilbert Durinho Burns retroactively regrets that decision to take that fight because his body broke down in that fight, right? But sometimes there are short notice opportunities that materialize, and I do wonder for someone like Mike Malott how equipped he would be to take advantage of one of those fights. I think he's on a tremendous trajectory. You know, he can carry the torch and the flag, I think, for Canada. And even if he loses a fight here or there, you see, not unlike Israel Adesanya and Alexander Volkanovski, mentally he's so forged that he's not so individually tied to a singular result that he couldn't get past it. But I'm blown away by this, man. I really am, in the fighter meeting, in the setting today. You know, I'm trying to get in like a cold plunge for like 30 seconds before I perish. This dude's like tripling down on cold exposure during training camp. Tremendous fighter, tremendous coaches, and we're excited to see what Mike Malott can do. Thanks to Proper Mike Malott. Thanks to Roger Krall. Thanks to a very prepared Ray Longo for checking in today. And thanks to all of you for ingesting this content, either on the DraftKings Network or the DraftKings YouTube channel, or of course on the audio side. We appreciate every last listener out there as well. We're right back on Monday. We'll recap Vettori and Cannonier, and Big Gun Brian Petrie and Kemp Flo both back with predictions for the next UFC Fight Night coming up on June 24th. Our producer is Cody Merrill, putting it all together. Thank you all for listening, for watching. I'm John Anik. Until next time, yo fucking late. Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.